Hello, and welcome to the CISC podcast. In each edition of this series, you'll have the chance to meet a CISC staff member or other educational professional involved with the CISC community. We think you will find these podcasts of great value as a variety of people share their unique insights in their respective fields. Now, please enjoy this edition of the podcast as our host, Bob Kretzmer, speaks with our guest.
In this episode of the CISC podcast, recorded on April 30, 2025, we're privileged to sit down with Kim Hernandez, the Division Director of Health Services for Kern County Public Health. Kim has been with the Kern County Public Health Department since 2009. She earned her undergraduate degree from UCLA and her master's in public health from Drexel University in Philadelphia. Kim has shared in the past with us an abundance of information related to the top health issues in Kern County. In today's episode, she updates us on issues such as measles, homeless, and other issues affecting our county current day. So with that introduction, please enjoy this episode of the CISC podcast. Well, Kim, I want to welcome you again to KETN, where we're recording this podcast on April 30th, 2025. It's wonderful to see you again, and I hope things have gone well.
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me back.
Well, wonderful. Kim, so much has changed since the last time we talked, so I thought it would be good for us to sit down with someone from the Kern County Public Health Department just to get a little bit of update on a few issues, but things in general here in Kern County. So what I thought I'd ask first is please remind us of your role with the Kern County Public Health Department.
Sure, I'm the Division Director of Health Services. So I oversee a lot of our health-related programs, maternal and child health, California Children's Services, our chronic and communicable disease teams, our public health clinic, and our public health laboratory.
Wonderful. And Kim, there's been so much in the news recently regarding measles. And I come from an age where I actually had measles as a child, and the vaccine came about my post-measles experience. But can you give us a little rundown on measles in general, and in particular, how, if at all, it's impacted Kern County?
Sure. So measles is, unfortunately, a very, very infectious viral illness. It usually presents with a fever and a cough and either, you know, a runny nose, conjunctivitis, or sometimes just congestion. And so we call those the three C's of measles. And so the measles is unfortunately a common childhood illness around the world, but it hasn't been circulating widely or ongoing in the United States since about 2000, when it was declared, the U.S. declared itself sort of measles free at that point. And so the currently ongoing this year in the United States, there have been 884 cases. And that's, you know, we're at the end of April, so not even quite halfway through the year, compared to last year in 2024, there were only 285 measles cases. So there's an ongoing outbreak in sort of the Texas and New Mexico area, and that has also expanded into 29 other states, plus the health jurisdiction of New York City. So 30 jurisdictions have been affected so far this year. In California, we've had 10 cases identified so far this year. And that's in comparison to 15 cases in California for all of 2024 and only 4 cases in 2023. So this is something we are watching on this ongoing basis. The cases in California have been travel associated. So typically people who have traveled abroad, who caught measles and they came home and were sick when they got home back here in California. But this is something we watch very closely. We're always on high alert at the public health department. Whenever there's any kind of outbreak or an unusual disease occurrence, measles, like I mentioned, is present around the world all the time. So it's always a possibility, and we're always on the lookout for measles because it is so infectious and is so prone to outbreaks. Typically, when we're looking for measles, we're looking for those typical symptoms as well as sort of an epidemiological link, either travel or contact with the person with measles. when there's an ongoing outbreak, we want to lower our index of suspicion. We want to think measles first because it is so highly infectious that we want to rule it out right away. In normal times when we don't have ongoing measles, you know, in the United States, we might put measles sort of farther down on that differential and be checking out other more common febrile rash illnesses first, especially if children are vaccinated, especially if they have no travel history. But when we know there are cases going on in the United States, cases that have occurred here in California, we want to be very, very vigilant. So there's a lot of communication that goes to our healthcare providers. We've had a number of cases in Kern County that we've had to look into to rule out, thankfully. We have not identified a case in Kern County yet so far. We hope to not have one because, you know, one typically means more, but we're watching because we are seeing, there have been cases in LA County, there's been cases in Fresno County, and so we're watching especially the areas around us. And one of the biggest things we have in Kern County is we have big freeways. We're a thoroughfare. So a lot of people come through here. Our last case of measles in a Kern County resident was back in 2004. So it's been many, many years since we've had a case in a resident. But since then, we've had a number of exposures that have happened in our community where we need to alert our community to watch for measles symptoms, to talk to their healthcare provider if they do develop them, and we want to make sure people are aware. And so this is also a time where we have been in the last couple of years really encouraging people to check their immunization status, to get up to date on vaccinations if they've fallen behind for any reasons, and measles is one of those really important ones to get right away.
Kim, I'm glad you mentioned vaccinations. That's another hot topic in the news. And so being that CISC is primarily concerned with the K through 12 student population, can you explain to me in, under what circumstances can an individual student be exempt from a measles vaccine with respect to their school attendance?
Right. In the state of California, you know, two doses of MMR, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, are required for school entry. Most kids get their first MMR at the age of one. That's typically when the series starts, and then most kids get their second dose around 4 or 5 before they go to kindergarten. And so that is a statewide requirement for any students in California. There are some circumstances where students may be exempt from getting the MMR or a different type of vaccine, and those come with medical exemptions. So since 2016 in California, a medical exemption required a physician, an MD or a DO, to sort of write down, you know, why this student should not get the MMR vaccine at this time. Because sometimes it's a not right this second, and for other people, they may have a condition that says we shouldn't get this really ever. You know, the MMR is a live virus vaccine, and so there are different concerns with a live virus vaccine. You typically don't get it if you are ill at the time you go to your doctor's office, things like that. But for school, the medical exemption has to be submitted to the state of California with the help of your healthcare provider. And so we always encourage people to talk to their healthcare provider. Their healthcare provider is generally the one who's going to be bringing it up because, you know, an exemption from one vaccine may not be an exemption from all of them. So it really depends on, you know, a child's condition. You know, if, for example, something might have happened and a child might have been exposed to measles, had measles, been, you know, traveled abroad or been born abroad, and they may not need a measles-containing vaccine when they go to school. But it's up to their healthcare provider to make that determination and to submit that that exemption to the state of California.
Thank you, Kim. Another area that is of concern for us all as educators is with respect to our homeless families population, and in particular school-age children of homeless families. Can you share with us what services might be available through the Kern County Public Health Department with respect to this issue?
So Kern County Public Health, we don't, you know, specialize in homelessness services, but we do offer a few things. You can get your birth certificate at the Public Health Department as well as, you know, at the Hall of Records. But if you, you know, do have a child that's experiencing homelessness, they can get access to a copy of their birth certificate for free. It does require getting a voucher from a homeless services provider. So, for example, if the family's at a shelter, that shelter can provide this voucher that they can bring to the health department. The parent does need to have have a valid government ID, but then they can request their child's birth certificate and they can get that free of charge. And so for school enrollment, you often have to have, you know, the child's birth certificate. So we can help with things like that. You know, as we mentioned, all of our regular clinic services are available, you know, to anybody in our community, but especially those who are experiencing something like homelessness, because we have what we call the Vaccines for Children's program. So every child can get access to the recommended vaccines free of charge. So especially experiencing homelessness, you know, maybe having some difficulty getting to insurance, we can help provide that so they can get their vaccines up to date so they can enroll in school, you know, or stay up to date if they're already in school. You know, one of the wonderful things we have been able to bring back online is our mobile health clinic. So for families who can't get to our brick and mortar clinic in Bakersfield, our mobile health clinic goes out almost every Monday through Thursday into different parts of our community. We go to Ridgecrest, we go to Delano, you know, we go to Cal City, we go to Taft. And so about once a month, we get to all of those areas. And so people who are experiencing homelessness outside of sort of Metro Bakersfield can also come to our clinic to get some of those services. I think another big one is our Waste Hunger Not Food program. And so this is a program where we are able to rescue food from mostly school sites, and then they're able to drop that food off into the community. And so our community can access sort of the excess food from schools that would historically have gone in the trash. But they were able to safely pick it up, transport it, and then redistribute into our community so that people who may be experiencing some food insecurity have access to nutritious, healthy food.
Wonderful. That's good to know that those services are available, Kim, for our homeless population. Another issue I wanted to touch on, if to the extent you can, we also hear a lot about teens suffering from depression-related issues. I know this was a particularly hot topic during the pandemic, and I was wondering if Kern County Public Health has any services, guidance related to depression among teens?
We don't have anything specific at Kern County Public Health, you know, regarding depression or with teens or in general. You know, we have a number of services that, you know, speak to mental and behavioral wellness and things like that. We'd really encourage families that, you know, if their teen is struggling, to really access their healthcare provider to get referrals into mental and behavioral health services. There is a program, there's a statewide program called Bright Life Kids that people can access online, where they can engage with health providers, health coaches, particularly mental health coaches. So it's sort of a step before you may communicate with a psychologist or psychiatrist, but it is available free of charge to all residents in the state of California. So we really encourage people to look into that if they're not already accessing it through other services.
Wonderful. Thank you. I just want to remind our listeners that today I am meeting with Kim Hernandez. She is the Division Director of Health Services for the Kern County Public Health Department. And we appreciate Kim coming in today and just sharing this terrific and widespread information about everything available here in Kern County. Kim, going on, I see here that food insecurity is also an issue for our student population. To the extent you can comment on how hunger impacts students and their educational progress, I imagine this is a topic that's been studied in the public health arena.
Absolutely. When I was thinking about this, you know, I really remember being in college and actually having a professor who brought us little snacks every week in class without fail. And he told us one day why he did this. And it was because he had a high achieving student many, many years ago who was always participating in class. And one day this student was just completely not engaged. And so after class, he asked the student, "Hey, what's going on? Like, you know, what happened today? Because this is abnormal for you." And that student told him that he was just so hungry, he couldn't think of anything else. And that day, my professor vowed that, you know, hunger would never keep his students from learning. And over many, many years, that's really kind of stuck with you. You know, this situation was with a student who was in college, someone who was already privileged in some aspects and still struggling with hunger. And so, you can really imagine what it might be for some of our younger students who may not have this self-awareness, you know, or have the ability to really explain what's going on with them of why they're struggling in school. And so it's really important to remember that here in Kern County, 1 in 5 children go to bed hungry. And, you know, that's a startling statistic in an area we produce so much food in our community. When we think about it, more than 150,000 of our kids in our community, they're eligible for free and reduced lunch. And that's because, you know, they, you know, their family income is at a certain level where we have concerns that they may not be able to access enough food to keep them healthy. And we know that food insecurity is a real thing in our community. It's been something we've been working to help mitigate and eventually resolve. And this is something that we all need to think about, because I think we've all been hungry. We've all had our stomachs grumble that has interrupted whatever we were doing. And so when we think about kids and if they are hungry and they can't focus on school, or if they're not getting nutritious food to help them focus on school, that's really going to have an impact. And so, you know, one of the programs we're really proud of at Public Health is Waste Hunger Not Food, because this took a lot of effort and energy and thought process so that we go, like I mentioned, primarily to schools, and all of the food that got prepared that the kids didn't choose to eat that day, right? Because we do have to over prepare because the kids have sort of a selection they can choose from. We're able to pick that up so that we can then safely transport it from the school to these drop-off sites in the community. We have a lot of community partners who are willing to receive it. And then people in our community can come to these sites, no questions asked, and take as much food as they would like, as they can use, that they can eat, that they can help their families with, their friends with, you know. And when we think about the food that's coming from schools in particular, it's already had sort of their nutrition levels vetted. It's fresh produce. It's fully packaged. So this isn't, you know, the apple the kid bit out of, right? This is whole fresh food that nobody has touched yet, but historically had to go in the trash because the school was not allowed to save it. They can't reuse it. And so we pick it up same day. It goes home with other people in our community same day. And so, you know, since the inception of that program, more than 4.5 million pounds of food has been rescued and redistributed to our communities. It's going into those hungry bellies instead of into the trash. And so we're really proud of that program. We're so grateful for all of our partners who have joined us in this. And there's also, you know, in addition to our program at Public Health, there's a number of community partners. You know, the Community Action Partnership for Kern, CAP-K, you know, they have more than 200, you know, points of access where people can also get access to food. And so there's a number of opportunities. You know, we're just one piece of that, but we have worked really hard to look for locations in Bakersfield, Ridgecrest, Taft, where we are in the community, in the neighborhood, to make it easier for people to get to us and to get food, you know, to take home to their families.
Kim, is it possible for individuals who may be interested in the Waste Hunger Not Food program to also contribute in some way? Or if someone was interested in learning more about the Waste Hunger Not Food program as a volunteer or contributor, how would one go about doing that?
Yeah, if they can access our website at kerncountypublichealth.com, we have a webpage for Waste Hunger, which has all the distribution sites, but there's also a link. Particularly, you know, we are looking in general for commercial food, permitted food. We have a couple of restaurants that donate. We have some grocery stores that donate. And so, you know, there are a couple of rules because of food safety and food handling that we have to go through, like all of our trucks are refrigerated, things like that. But, you know, people who are interested, we welcome them to partner with us.
Wonderful, wonderful. Another area of concern, and also an issue that's been in the news locally and nationally, has been the whole issue related to Medi-Cal. And it's my understanding that we have a substantial number of families who receive Medi-Cal benefits in Kern County. Has the Kern County Public Health Department taken a look at this issue and given any thought to how cuts in Medi-Cal could impact the work being done by public health?
Absolutely. This is something we are trying to pay close attention to and watch. the last thing I saw, you know, more than 500,000 people in Kern County are Medi-Cal recipients. So that's a huge proportion of our community. We know at Public Health, the large majority of our patients and our clients are Medi-Cal recipients. So this is something we're trying to pay close attention to, because at Public Health, we do rely on reimbursement in some of our areas, particularly in our clinic services, in order to continue providing those services. And so this is something we're watching. You know, we do have concerns that if there are cuts to Medi-Cal, that we will see our families struggle even further, right? Some of our most vulnerable, you know, community members rely on this service, on this health plan, in order to seek their health care. So we're watching it closely. We're trying to pay attention to, you know, what may be changing to be prepared, because they're sort of on the receiving end as a provider to Medi-Cal recipients. We want to make sure we're working within the parameters of what we're supposed to be doing, and also making sure we maximize reimbursement where we can so we can continue providing services.
Right. And I would imagine those families that are eligible for Medi-Cal rely on those benefits for non-emergency care. In other words, health checks, physician visits for students and their children. And I would imagine having access to those visits probably impacts or cuts down on the number of emergency room visits or urgent care visits that we would be seeing in Kern County. So it's good to know that Public Health is keeping a close eye on that. Kim, I also wanted to just reflect back a little bit on what Kern County looks like, our public health system, and thoughts given relative to coming out of the pandemic, although it's my understanding that the COVID-19 virus is still out there and it's something that we have to be aware of. But first of all, talk a little bit about what is the status of COVID-19 in Kern County?
So COVID-19 continues to circulate in Kern County, as well as throughout, you know, the state and the world. You know, it's more moved into what we call our winter respiratory virus sort of surveillance. And so, you know, during what people historically called flu season, we've now started calling it winter respiratory virus season, because there's multiple viruses that are circulating. And today, actually, the 30th of April marks sort of the end of the typical winter respiratory virus season. So we've been watching it. You know, we did see some increases during winter. We have been seeing it decline over the past few weeks, you know, and we do expect to kind of see very low levels that circulate during our summer season. So this is something we still continue to watch, it as well as influenza, as well as RSV, and other illnesses that tend to circulate during sort of what was historically known as the flu season. So it's something we still encourage people to be considerate about, you know, to think about as we move into our next season, when we get around to October, November of this year, to really consider protecting themselves as well as loved ones against COVID, against influenza, and against RSV, because there are vaccines for each of those, particularly if you're high risk or if you're around people who are high risk.
Kim, are any of those vaccines in combination with each other at this point? Are those all separate vaccines?
At this time, they're all individually separate vaccines. So it would require, you know, three different pokes. But, you know, and there's different sort of recommendations depending on age, depending on health status, as well as other risk factors. So we always encourage people, when we get back to sort of next flu season, to talk to your healthcare provider, see what should I get, what should I protect myself from, what should I work to protect my family and my community from.
And it's my understanding as well that, for example, if you are living with someone that maybe have a vulnerable health issue, that those are the types of concerns you'd want to pay particular attention to in consideration of whether or not you want to go and take that step to get the vaccine.
Yes, absolutely. We always encourage people, you know, when it's been recommended to stay up to date on all of their vaccines, but also to consider the people that you are around. You may be a young, healthy adult, have no medical issues, but you might be around, you know, a newborn baby. You might be around an elderly grandparent. And even though if you got the flu, your likelihood of getting really sick is low, if you got the flu and you pass it to somebody who's very vulnerable, they could end up in the hospital. They could end up potentially dying. And so we do want to remember that, you know, it takes a whole community to protect our most vulnerable.
Sure. Kim, all the information you've shared has been again, just so educational for myself and I believe for our listeners. I wanted to just ask you if there's anything else out there in the public health world, particularly in Kern County, that you might want to share or bring to our attention.
I think, you know, we're right on the heels of April, and this is typically where we do a lot of Valley Fever education. So I think this is another thing to just remind everybody in our community that, you know, Valley Fever is endemic in Kern County. Your risk of getting Valley Fever is higher in Kern County than most other places. It's all along the Central Valley in the southwestern United States. But we really want to remind people that, you know, they want to think about Valley Fever. If they get a fever, if they get a cough that doesn't go away, we really want to encourage people to go talk to their healthcare provider, because we can test for Valley Fever. It's a simple blood test. And if you need medication, you know, we'd want you to get to your provider so your provider will prescribe it. Not everybody needs it, and not everybody with a fever and a cough has Valley Fever. But we just want to remind people to think about it, especially if they're exposed to dirt or dust. You know, if they're outside in the middle of a dust storm, if they're engaging in activities that kick up a lot of dust, that if they develop some symptoms a couple of weeks down the road, to really think about whether or not it's Valley Fever, because Valley Fever is something that sometimes needs treatment. Valley Fever sometimes can be very severe. So we just wanted to kind of throw that one out there as well, and just think of Valley Fever as it heats up and it gets drier and it gets windy.
And just to recap on the Valley Fever issue, Kim, what are some of the symptoms we'd be looking for there?
The most common symptoms are a fever, a high fever, as well as a cough that lingers, right? A cough that doesn't go away after 2 weeks. So really need to think about Valley Fever. The symptom that typically drives people to the doctor is a rash. And so there's a specific type of, you know, we call it a Valley Fever rash that shows up that can be painful, but oftentimes people get it on their legs or their extremities, and they just don't know what it is. And they have to think back to the fact that they also had a fever and a cough. And so those are sort of the three main symptoms that might be an indicator you should talk to your healthcare provider.
And is Valley Fever something that can be passed on from one individual to another?
No, Valley Fever cannot be passed person to person. It comes from a fungus that's in the soil, and that fungus gets kicked up in the air. We inhale it. When we inhale it, we don't cough it back out, and so I can't give it to the person next to me. And, you know, for most people, you know, 40% of people will have no symptoms at all. 60% of people will have no symptoms at all. About 40% will have sort of mild symptoms. They might have that fever, that cough, remember it, might end up going to the doctor. What we're really looking for is, you know, that 10%, 1 to 10% of people who can have very, very severe symptoms, where their Valley Fever can leave their lungs, it can go to their bones, it can go to their brain, it can go to your joints. And so it's something we really want to prevent against. And so if we can identify Valley Fever early and treat it, we hope to avoid it going to other parts of your body and causing some really severe illness.
Well, Kim, thank you again. I enjoy speaking with you so much, and I always learn a tremendous amount. So thank you for giving up your time today to meet with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the CISC podcast and greatly appreciate you listening to our show. Please check the CISC property and liability website at cisc.kern.org for a complete listing of podcast topics under the property and liability tab. Until next time, stay safe as we continue with the CISC mission of schools helping schools.
Production facilities for the CISC podcast are provided by KETN, a service of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools.